Welcome, everybody, to another Pacific Novel Project Workshop, the podcast that workshops and edits manuscripts and talks about books. I'm your host, Jason Keith, and your other host,
Steve Childress. Oh, yeah, I should have waited for that cue.
I was given the cue because I didn't know if you'd introduce yourself if I didn't give you a cue.
Oh, well, you know.
You can be very shy sometimes.
Sometimes. Which, speaking of, I'm really digging social distancing. One of the best things ever.
So, speaking of, how are you doing in the apocalypse? Sounds okay?
You know, other than not being able to work from home, I really don't have a problem with it.
Yeah.
I mean, other than, you know, the worry of people getting sick and the people dying, that sucks. Condolences to all the people that have lost people so far during this pandemic. I'm a homebody anyway, so I mean, as far as like, you know, the staying indoors thing and staying away from crowds, okay, I'm fine with that.
Yeah, strangely been a boon for my morale and health because, I mean, I'm supposed to work at home in my job, but we have a certain waiting period to do that. And mine kept on getting pushed back because I kept on changing divisions at work. And you know, I have some issues with anxiety and not commuting on the train when it's crowded, you know, stuff linked to my service. And this is very stressful going to work and coming home. So I've actually been a lot better since I started working at home.
Well, I'm glad that things are improving with the working from home aspect going on for you. Cause yeah, it's scary out there. It's kind of ghost towny in some places too. Just kind of weird.
Yeah, I took a couple pictures like leaving work before they sent us all home and closed the office of just the street at traffic hour. There'd be like one car and maybe like one other person way down the street. The Starbucks in my building, all the chairs are up and there's just some girl standing behind the counter all by herself.
Oh, man.
The coffee must flow.
The coffee must flow. Essential workforce.
Yep. $12.75 an hour.
Yep. Yep.
Anyway, what can you do? Just do what you gotta do and then come out the other side.
I mean, that's the idea. Yeah. We'll see how it goes.
Well, that's our pandemic sidebar.
Corona sidebar.
Let's get to editing. And this week it is Steve's turn. We are editing his manuscript, Hollywood Dreams, a noir story of murder and deceit and corruption and Nazis.
I actually came off a stint of writer's block. I didn't know where to go with anything. So I just started on something and just kept going. Hopefully at least some of this is redeemable. We'll see.
Oh, yeah. Like the day before you were like, hey, can I turn something else in? And then like, boom, you got like 11 or 12 pages here, like overnight.
Yeah, almost.
So Hollywood Dreams, young lady found murder on the beach. Detective Toom has been trying to find out who did it, and he's narrowed his suspects down. Looks like an Anton Richter or maybe even his son. And last we left off, they were trying to hunt down a police officer who they believed was a secret Nazi and a spy in the police force. I'm going to call him a spy. Maybe spy is not the right word, but I'm going to say spy.
Okay.
So they're staking out the Sunset Tower. No, wait. They are staking out his residence, Paul Fisher's residence, Officer Paul Fisher, PD, scumbag PD. All right. So they're sitting in the car. They're sitting in the car drinking, freaking cops.
Hey, you know, it's the 1940s, 1940.
Money asked for my flask and I hand it over. Money doesn't drink on the job too much, although he has had a couple of drinks at Lou. Toom's been a bad influence on him.
Indeed.
So he asked what it is. And Toom says it's some of the old shine we used to run, which kind of made me laugh. And I'm wondering, when he says old shine, does he mean that's like leftover stuff? Or does that mean he's still making it?
Oh, I was going with leftover stuff.
So on this page, somebody comes up to the... Oh, no, they don't see him, right? Somebody comes up and picks him up.
Yes.
they're eating. I thought it was kind of funny. They're in Danny's car, his super nice car, and they're just eating hot dogs and crap. I just wrote what kind of car. I was just curious. I don't know if it's important or not, but I don't know. Kind of insight into Danny.
Oh, yeah. Good point. Oh.
I didn't have any. Oh, page 194. I didn't have any comments on page 194 other than wondering where that old shine is. Maybe even Monty can make a wisecrack about it. And me thinking it's kind of funny they're eating Danny's car and wondering what kind of car it is. If anybody wants to follow around, follow along. Go to patreon.com/Pacific Novel Project and subscribe at the $2 level. And you'll have access to our manuscripts. Be easier to follow along and see what changes we're making and why we're making them. All right, page 195. Two makes a Get Out of Dodge reference. And Monty's like, Dodge City? I just made a comment that I thought this was going to set up another old person joke. So bottom of page 195, somebody has come to pick Paul up. They follow him. And then they arrive at the Sunset Tower, Los Angeles, California. And Sunset, this place is like a hoity-toity, pricey apartment place, right?
Yeah, it was originally for penthouses. For the rich and famous. But now it's I think it's like a hotel.
I wonder, I'm going to sidebar penthouses. Doesn't a penthouse have to be at the top of the building? I mean, isn't that the...
Not necessarily.
No?
I don't think so anyway.
It seems like everything below that's just a condo.
A penthouse is an apartment or unit on the highest floor of an apartment building, condominium, or hotel. Penthouses are typically differentiated from other apartments by luxury features. That's a penthouse apartment on Wikipedia.
So not everybody in the penthouse building is actually in the penthouse.
The stuff I was reading about it, they kept calling them penthouses.
All right. I think we should link some of these things because, it's cool. Like, your story's just filled with real places and a lot of them still exist.
Yeah.
Put some of them up on the site. That would be kind of interesting once I fix that better. So my only comment, bottom of page 195, was you've mentioned that they're in a Plymouth a few times. So I was just wondering if mentioning it again here was maybe a little overkill.
Yeah, probably.
On page 196, they're just checking out the place. The men go inside the building. So that doorman looks pretty intense. He seems to be, because he's eyeballing people walk by. So I kind of got the impression that maybe he was, one of the... Nazi guys or something. So, and he knew that he was guarding some special stuff. But then they kind of bribe him like a normal doorman later.
Yeah.
Which isn't necessarily bad. I was just curious about if he's just a normal doorman or if he was somebody in the know.
Oh, I was just kind of just trying to paint him out to be a dick.
Well, you kind of nailed him being a dick. Monty wants to go in there and just start throwing his weight around. So they go up to the doorman and they ask who are those guys who came in, and the doorman's like, who are you visiting? And I was like, I already told you, they bust out their badges. So this part here, Monty walks past the doorman. He stops outside the doors leading in or out of the hotel. He shakes his head to a few silhouettes behind the glass doors. This exit is closed. I had to read that a couple times to realize that he was just stopping people from coming out.
Yeah.
And it was kind of odd because it's the front door. So where are they supposed to exit out of? And then the doorman, that's when the doorman starts to back down a little bit. Hey, I don't want any trouble, man. Page 197, Tomb says, well, then do your job. Wanting to grab him by the collar and shake the bastard. The itch starts small every time, just a faint tickle under the skin when the dander's up. A short of breaking something or catching a prick on the end of your knuckles will calm it. So I think that was supposed to be like, and nothing short of breaking something.
Yeah. Good catch.
Oh, so they, they do the standard, hey, let's bribe this guy. And Monty's like, hey, I'm really going to hit you if this ain't good. So I thought maybe a better threat.
Okay.
We're going to do all those horrible things to you that you hear cops do to people.
Well, yeah, I could go that route.
This was a very big bribe.
I know. I was like, I thought about it later and I was like, that was actually a pretty good amount of money back then.
Yeah, they both give him $20.
So I was like, I need to dial that back, but I just haven't done it yet.
It's like Humphrey Bogart tipping money.
Uh-huh.
So they ask what's up with the penthouse, and he tells them that it belongs to Richter, and he's Anton Richter, and he's like, no, the son is there. It looks like you're pulling a me and don't have the son's name yet. So you just got like insert same son's name.
Yeah, I have a name for it, but I couldn't remember what it was, and I was like, I'm not going back through to find it. Not right now anyway.
Pro tip, don't find and replace that. Tomb says, what about Anton? Has he been around? I ask, and he takes the other 20 from Monty. The doorman folds the two bills up and slips in the breast pocket. Is that all, detectives? We never had this conversation, Monty adds, holding up another color, a couple dollars. So I just thought for $40, why didn't you impress him on a yes or no if Anton's been around?
I think I meant to, but I think I had a brain failing.
Page 198. And they go to the penthouse. And I just had a question here, a couple paragraphs down. I'm closer to... So they're having an argument who's going to be the next briber. I'm closer to retirement than you and have dues... And you have dues to pay, so he wants money to pay up. So they go up to the door again, because they walked away on the last page and then had a discussion. Hey, you think we should go in now? Yeah, let's go in now. So now they say, hey, we're here to see young Richter apartment J. And then the doorman replies, no one home in J currently. The owner just recently took his leave. And I'm kind of like, who are they talking to? Are they talking to the guy they just bribed?
It was supposed to be the desk clerk, but I forgot to write the desk in, I guess.
Okay. Yeah, you didn't show them going inside. All right. So, so did they not walk away from the building? They actually walked inside?
Yeah, they walk inside.
Okay, just a little TLC, and then I'm sure that'll be cleared up. I like Monty's response. We've got a special knock, and he takes out his badge. I like Monty's development from straight-laced dude to hanging out in the bar drinking and during daylight hours and roughing people up.
Yeah, he's coming along.
I was a little curious about this comment. The busboy's going by with dirty plates and stuff, and you know, people are eating, and he says he wishes he was at Lou's. So I was just wondering what the aromas were. Was it like booze and now he's wanting a drink?
Okay.
Or does the food smell the same? Kind of hanging out with Tomb all this time, I even would kind of, my mind even kind of went to all the food smells boring and I miss the character of Lou's greasy BLT sandwiches or something like that. You know, maybe he was going the opposite direction with that.
Could be. Okay. I'll look at that.
And then the last sentence, up the elevator, right and left, bring us to Richter's son's penthouse. Stowing my lock picks set in my coat pocket, I take further steps in past the foyer. So I think you just, it took me a couple times to read this. I think you just need to actually say pick the locks.
Okay. Can do.
Because in the next sentence, when they start talking about the kitchen and stuff and whatever, I was like, why is there a penthouse next to the kitchen?
Okay.
I didn't actually realize he had picked
the locks. Oh, that's funny. Okay.
Page 199. So they're in there checking things out. This part where you have where it says, did we saw Anton's son leave a bit ago? I went back and double checked that because I didn't remember that. And I don't see that.
Okay.
So you wanted him coming out of the building? And if so, why would they go in the building just to look around not knowing he's there? Or would they be interested in following him?
More interested in the building.
And in fact, was he supposed to leave before they bribed the doorman? Because then they wouldn't even know that his son was involved in anything.
He was supposed to, but
okay.
Now I'm wondering if I still want to go that route. I forgot to mention him leaving earlier when they're sitting in the car, because that's when I was going to have him step out, because that's when they were like, okay, well, let's go up and have a look around.
Okay. So he tells Monty to look out in the next paragraph after that line. And in the middle, when he's searching the desk, Monty comes over and starts looking the chest, and I just type, what a crappy lookout.
Yeah. True.
So you can do with that what you want.
Okay.
It just seemed like an inconsistency, or mine didn't get it.
Yeah. I'm not doing what you say.
We had to tell my daughter that we're not boomers.
Oh man.
And she was like, oh, it just means old people now.
What? No. Wow. Wow.
She was like, it's just old people who don't know what electronics are. It doesn't matter.
Those aren't boomers. Those are Luddite. Boomers are among the Luddite clan, but...
6 of 1.
Oh, 6 of 1. Damn.
All right. So I thought this was interesting. They page 199. So the last episode, I'm going to just say last episode, because it's fun to say that. Last episode, they had their evidence stolen out of the safe, and that's why they're following Paul, because they, the cop, because they thought maybe he had something to do with it. And they find all the stuff here in the apartment. And Monty's like, what's up with this? And Tomb says, maybe they're sacrificing it for a bigger play. Going on to page 200, first half of the page is when they're having the discussion. You know what? They probably knew we were following them, and they just left this evidence here to distract us. And so they go running to Lou's, because that's where they're hiding the girl, the witness girl. So we get to Lou's in the middle of that page. And it's trash. A couple of the regular customers, who are probably buddies of Lou, are sitting there with ice packs and look like they've been roughed up. I didn't really have any comments on this page. Page 201. They go down into the speakeasy, you know, because they realized, oh, Anton knows about the speakeasy, because that's where they're hiding the witness. So they took Elsa. Elsa's a witness. And I just highlighted this part for Lou, the bartender, the owner of the place, because he said, hey, they took Elsa, you know, Anna, Tomb's daughter, was hidden, and now she's with Danny. And then he says, the people who did this, they took Elsa, in another paragraph. And I'm like, yeah, I think we got that.
Oh, he says it twice, not really for the reader, but for Tomb, because Tomb doesn't even acknowledge it. He's just like, where's Anna now? He's just all, Anna, Anna, Anna.
Okay.
Seeing how you interpreted that, it might need some clarification or just a total change.
So then Monty, you know, is questioning Lou. Hey, did they say anything? You know, he goes into cop mode. They refer to a ranch, and they think it's Murphy Ranch, which is a real-life Nazi hangout in the early 40s outside L.A. Let's go to page. I didn't say anything else on that page. Let's go to page 202. They're going to call Abbott, who's their captain. And they meet Captain at the Griffith Observatory. They meet Abbott at the Griffith Observatory, and they're showing him the evidence, which they were going to show him before it was stolen, but now they've got it back. The bait. They got the bait back. And he says, we can use this, but they will be much more attractive with Elsa's testimony. So I'm asking the question, and I think I've asked this question before, like what exactly she's witness to, because I don't think it's legal to be a Nazi.
About the art, where the art's coming from.
Do we know it's art, though? Because it's in a box.
It wouldn't be just her testimony that they would need. They'd also need Danny. Yeah, Danny wouldn't be very keen on putting himself out there.
Danny being a small-time gangster. Yeah,
money launderer.
Yep.
You know, hide some extra zeros here and there.
All right, so the rest of the page, they just discuss, like, how they could possibly get into Murphy Ranch and how they're looking for Paul, the crooked cop. Page 203. Very top, we have 8 hours to find Fisher. I was just wondering where that came from.
Oh, the 8 hours. Oh, there was something I had in my head.
Okay. Yeah, because there was no ransom note or anything.
Yeah.
All right.
I'm going to ponder that.
203. All right, they break up and they go to Danny's home. So Danny's got a pretty nice place. Two paragraphs down. They wouldn't expect it to, Monty says, exiting the car. Monty wants to charge the ranch. And my comment was like, doesn't Danny have boys? And then the very next line is, inside the home, a couple of men stand in the foyer with Tommy guns. I was like, whoop, there they are. Yeah, I thought Tommy was going to round up like a dozen people. That's the way it sounded earlier in the story.
Oh, gotcha. Gotcha.
Earlier in the story, it was the guard Anna, not, you know, invade a Nazi lair.
Right.
But I keep expecting more men to pop up.
Right. Yeah, especially around Danny, they should be. Big galoots and weaselly yeah. Little dudes, stuff like that.
All right. 204. No, I didn't have anything to say on 204. This is just where they're making a plan. Anna's there. She's making bacon, which I think is funny. So they're just eating, making their plans to take on Murphy Ranch, which Tomb doesn't want to do, but Danny's kind of down with it. They're looking for another person. I see you brought Grady back in. It's like, ooh, the return of Grady. Yeah, I want
to try him back in this spot and see if there's any saving him at all, man.
Yeah, well, I'm sure when you go through again, you know, something will solidify. Then Monty's dropping Negro bombs. Tomb is not happy with that. 205. So they want to send Anna away on 205, but Anna, they decide to make Anna the getaway driver because she really wants to help. I didn't really have any comments other than the enjoyment of bacon on that page.
Yeah, I mean, bacon, it's good for a lot of things.
206. Don't think I had anything in the comment on this, because this is where they get done with the argument with her and say, hey, let's make her the getaway driver. I didn't really have anything to add at this time there. Bottom of 206, we get to Murphy Ranch. Looks like we're outside the ranch. You know, it's late in the afternoon. They pull up to a place where they hide the car. And going on to page 207, the first paragraph, Toom has a flashback to World War One, which I like. I would just kind of maybe want something. What does he see that triggers it? What does he see that makes him think about it?
Okay. I was kind of leaning on just kind of the look of the trees and all that stuff, but
yeah, that's okay. But what about the trees? Would be, you know, like maybe his flashback is the trees on some farm that walnut trees. So maybe he was a walnut orchard at some place in Belgium, and right before an attack that, you know, stripped those things out of there. Or maybe it's just the closest. Maybe him just being this close to Germans makes him nuts. I don't know. But
fair enough.
I just still like to see something there, some connection. And because he is ready. I mean, he's holding a gun, getting ready to go to battle, right?
Yeah, just about.
Yeah, so I can picture him standing there near these walnut trees with his gun in his hand, and maybe him thinking about when he had a gun in his hand in some orchard, the walnut orchard, some orchard of some poor farmer whose land's about to get blown up. Nazis coming through. Oh, I guess they weren't Nazis then. And nothing else there. They're just, they decide they're waiting for nightfall. All right. I didn't really say anything on page 208. It's just them, they spot the generators. A couple of them are going to try and go take out the generators to darken the place. And a couple of them are going to hit the big building. And page 209, is this the last page? Oh, yep, last page. Grady and I, halfway down, Grady and I find a way to slide down an embankment to the ground below us. The crickets seem louder when you are somewhere you're not supposed to be. Kind of like that sensory, I was going to say imagery, but I guess it's not imagery, but I like that sensory, and that kind of like brings a little tenseness to his demeanor.
A little heightened senses kind of.
Battle juices are flowing. And that's all I had.
Well, right on. That helps me. Helps me kind of figure out that I'm on a decent path.
I wanted to sit down in person, but since that's probably not going to happen for a while, maybe we just sit down on the one day and just talk over the story for like half an hour or so. We could record it and see if it's worth anybody listening to.
Yeah. I mean, who knows? Could be some gems in it. You never know.
If we help somebody get over their writer's block or inspire them to, you know, sit down and belt that out, we've done our job.
Indeed. I agree.
All right. Do you have any questions for me?
I think I'm good right now. I mean, I imagine some questions will come to me, but for right now, I think I'm good with kind of where we're at with this workshop.
All right. Well, you know how to get a hold of me.
That I do.
Man, not a lot of sidebars this time. We just had our opening pandemic sidebar, and that's kind of it.
I guess there's not as many things happening around towns lately.
Yeah, we didn't get sidetracked too much.
Yeah, sometimes we do. So this is kind of a quick one. Do we want to introduce the next book on the outro on this, or do we want to?
Oh yeah, sure. We can talk about the next book.
Okay.
So our Bring Your Own Book Club. We just finished Bypass Gemini by Joseph Lallo, and we're going to talk about that in a couple of days. And our next book after that is going to be Shipbreaker by Paolo Bacigalupi, is I think how you pronounce his name.
I think so.
So I read a book by him called The Wind-Up Girl that I thought was really interesting. And we've done a little bit of science fiction, fantasy type stuff the last few weeks. So hopefully this will be, even though his last book that I read was kind of science fiction-y, this one looks like it's more straight fiction. So we'll give it a shot. Shipbreaker by Paolo Bacigalupi. Check it out, read it, and when we talk about it, you can make comments on our our Facebook page, Pacific Novel Project, or patreon.com/Pacific Novel Project. Let us know what you think. And if you want to join in private discussions, we get the $2 level. You get our bonus Bring Your Own Book Club podcast, which we talk about things that we weren't able to talk about on the regular podcast. Gets you involved that way and gets you access to our reading list. And you can add to our reading list and request books. And we'll certainly give our patrons priority in the book choosing department. In the meantime, we'll just continue to randomly choose our own books.
Works for me. You know, I mean, we'd like to have people's input. If you're able, interested, or sitting on the fence, hop off the fence and let's make some decisions together about Bring Your Own Book Club books.
Yeah, because you ain't going to have nothing to do till long past Easter, I'm afraid.
Yeah, I'm pretty much thinking we're in for a little bit of a longer haul than
Passover.
Yeah.
Wait, is Passover at Easter? Yeah, Passover's at Easter.
Yeah, we talked about the Millerites during the apocalypse segment of our bonus content for the road. If people think Passover's going to save them, we should just start calling them Millerites.
That sounds like people who drink Miller beer.
I think Miller beer is better than Millerites.
I was just going to say, I don't know who's more wrong.
I'm going with Millerites.
And, you know, I'm leaning toward Miller.
At least Miller beer actually exists.
Oh, yeah, but I wish it didn't.
Whoa. Well, you're talking about the champagne of beers there, pal.
I got a friend. He's like, he's in San Diego. He's in the military. He was out for a while working as a civilian, and then he went back in or something. And he's like part owner of a bar, and he's an officer, so he makes good money. And he's like, pictures of him with a ice bucket full of Bud Light. And you know me, I'm a beer snob. He made some comment about, man, he got the beer, and then some homeless guy had asked him something. He's like, what do you do when you got a armload of Bud Light? And a homeless guy says whatever it was, I don't remember. And this, my response to that was, if you got an armful of Bud Light, maybe you should rethink your life choices.
Oh, man. I agree on the Bud Light, though.
I'm snobby about some things, and beer is one of them. I think that if you can't afford a nicer beer, then you should save up for that nicer beer.
Kind of like Charlie saving up for his chocolate bar.
If you're drinking Bud Light, you're just an alcoholic. Oh, my God. Okay, let's continue this sidebar.
Well, what's wrong with being an alcoholic except for your liver hating you?
Well, there's lots of things wrong with being an alcoholic, but... I'm in resorts near Animal Kingdom. It's called Sanu. One of the best places I've ever eaten at. It was fantastic. There was I like red beers and dark beers and like amber beers. And so they had like the Safari Amber. So I ordered that. It's like, oh, that was brewed especially by Budweiser for us. Thought she said Budweiser because, you know, I'm hard of hearing, but sure. And she walked away. And Christy looked at me, my wife, she looked at me and said, she's like, I'm guessing you didn't hear what she said. I was like, I think she said Budweiser. And she's like, did. And I was like, you know what? I'll give him a shot. So I got this beer, dude. And, this might actually be in your wheelhouse too.
Oh, okay.
So I got this beer, you know, I smelled it and it smelled exactly like a regular Budweiser. And then I tasted it and it tasted like a regular Budweiser. And this is where you come in, you know, hating on corporations.
Oh yeah.
It would not surprise me at all if Budweiser was just saying they were brewing this special and we're just putting some food coloring in it. Because it was just a amber-colored Budweiser, tasted and smelled exactly like the regular thing. Yeah, I sent it back.
Oh, man.
I usually don't send stuff back, but I was like, yeah, you can take this back. I'm not going to drink this.
Oh.
And she's like, oh, you want something else? I was like, nah, just this water that I'm going to sit here and gargle rudely.
Oh, that's pretty good. That's pretty good.
So, oh man, I'm serious, dude. It's just like, come on, man. Brewing this special. No fucking way. All right, we will reconvene this in a couple days to talk about Bypass Gemini.
Bypass Gemini. It'll be fun.
Yep, and if you want to see or listen to, I should say, our other Bring Your Own Book podcast episodes, we talk about a variety of different novels from all genres. And patreon.com/Pacific Novel Project. They are free to listen to.
And you totally should.
Totally should.
It would make me happy.
Now, Steve would be stoked if we got a comment.
I would be. But we don't feed trolls.
If you're going to leave a negative comment, just make it a good one.
At least be funny.
We respect creativity. If it's just the same old lame stuff, then, you know, we're not going to respect that.
True. I'm with you on that. Good night out there, and good night, Jason.
Till next time, right on.